summer on REMFM, live from Buda Beach, Puerto Banús, with Hannah Murray.
Welcome back to the Book Show, broadcasting live from the beautiful Buda Beach. My next guest is a local author joining us on the phone from the Costa Blanca, William Daish. Welcome to the programme, William.
Hello, Hannah. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. Whereabouts are you living in the Costa Blanca?
Well, I'm living in an urbanisation called Gata Residential, which is just above Gata de Gorgos, quite close to Denia and Javier.
Okay, and how long have you been there for?
Just a couple of years.
A couple of years. And why did you decide to move over to Spain?
Well, actually, we've been holidaying here for quite some time in a friend's place and enjoying it very much. And then they wanted to start a business up here, so they asked us to come out with them and help us start the business.
Mm.
And when we did that, I was always intending to do some writing, which is, you know, I've always wanted to write and have written in the past. And so eventually, once the business was started up, I slid over and did some writing, and here we are.
There we go. So you tried to get published in the UK, but it's not that easy, is it?
it's damn hard, I have to say that. The problem is, you know, a new author is a risk, a big risk to a normal publishing house, a financial risk. And so they prefer to stick with their known authors.
Mm.
And, you know, only about one every year gets taken on by the average publishing house.
Yeah. But you met someone from Libros International.
Well, actually, what happened was we saw the advertisement in the paper. And they were advertising for new authors because it was a new company started by two existing authors who wanted to give other authors a chance. And the critical issue, as far as I was concerned, after all the negativity I'd suffered in the UK with the rejections, was the fact that they promised to read every submission that they received.
Mm.
You're never quite sure what happens to your submission in the UK when you submit it to a major publisher. It might get left on the train, or it might be read by the office junior or whatever, you know. But if it doesn't grab them in the first line or two, they don't bother with it.
Mm.
But here, you know, your submission is actually read.
Fantastic. So it's what's called a factional novel, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Is it supposed to be, for the person who's reading it, are they supposed to know and understand which bits are true and which bits aren't?
I think that most people that have read it so far, and it's got some terrific reviews on Amazon already and other places, people are not having a problem with that at all. They can see what is factual and what isn't. Do you want me to explain that?
Yeah, go on.
Okay. Well, there are sort of historical bits in it for interest that I put in every now and again to make sure that people are sort of understanding what's going on in the background. But the it's in three levels, really. The major story is the fact that it's about the Navy and it's about World War One, and a lot of action, which is carried through by fictional characters. My hero, George Royal, is a young naval gunner, so he goes off to sea and goes through all these actions, these naval battles. And when he comes home, you see what's going on at home during the First World War as well. And he gets himself involved in the love triangle at home. And so you're seeing the factual events of the action with a fictional character, hero. But his family are also fictional, obviously, and in the background at home. And then on top of all that, there's the actual fact, historical fact, about what the law lords are doing. The warlords, who are arguing over the cabinet table about what they're going to do next. And then you have the Prime Minister, H.H. Asquith, who is obsessed with a young 24-year-old society woman. And it leads him into a love triangle.
So there's lots of different things going on, isn't there? There's lots to really grab and keep your attention throughout the book.
I hope so. That's what I intended, anyway.
And that's what people say, as you mentioned, the reviews. You've got some fantastic reviews of people saying they couldn't put it down.
Yes, and I love it when they do that.
You obviously paid them well. Kidding, of course.
Yes.
No, it's fantastic. You've had some great response, which is great. Has it sort of encouraged you to write more?
Yes, I'm partway through a thriller at the moment because I wanted to write on two different sort of into two genres to see what worked for me and what worked for publishers. And so I'm partway through a thriller at the moment, which might go out under a slightly different name, but it'll be by me.
Why would you put it out under a different name?
Well, because readers tend to want to follow on, I think, where you were before. And I'm going to do an Over by Christmas too.
Are you?
Eventually. Oh, yeah. There's a lot more to come yet.
What, with the same characters?
The same characters, yeah. Not the upper level. That would be different, obviously. But the same characters at the fictional level. Yes, there's a lot more to come.
So the thriller, can you tell us a bit about that?
Without giving too much away, it's about a young divorced guy who has his two children with him in Brighton one day when he's taking them out. And he loses his son. And he discovers that the son has been taken by a paedophile ring.
Oh, God.
And it's his trauma of, you know, going through... It's almost like the Madeleine situation, really.
Mm.
Except that I started writing it long before that happened. But the tricky bit here, or the twist, if you like, is that he is contacted by a secret organisation, an anti-paedophile organisation, run by a multi-millionaire. And it leads him into conflict with the police, obviously, because he joins them. And that is the essence of it. And I hope at the end of the story to have a police inspector who's in charge of the paedophile unit at Scotland Yard in conflict with his own conscience about, you know, this unit can do things that he can't, and should he shock them when he finds out who they are, or should he...
Wow, that sounds like a really good story, and I was going to say... I probably shouldn't say what I was thinking, but in terms of things, obviously, as you said, the Madeleine McCann and the paedophile rings that are happening, there's a certain amount of speculation as to whether things like that happen scarily all the time.
Sure.
Aren't there? Which we obviously can't comment on too much, but...
No, we can't.
where did you get the idea from for that?
I was in that very situation myself one day when I had my two children in an estranged marriage on Brighton Pier. I turned around and my son had disappeared whilst I was paying attention to my daughter.
Really?
And the panic that I went into at that stage, I didn't know whether he'd fallen over the edge of the pier or whether somebody had snatched him or whatever. And the lack of assistance I had. It was in the heat of the summer, if you can imagine, a crowded pier. And you can hardly move. The Jobsworth, the sort of security Jobsworth, who crossed their arms and said, well, it's nothing to do with us. It's not a missing child as yet, you know.
God, because you have to wait, don't you? You have only start looking after a certain amount of time. And
absolutely. I was going ballistic about the whole thing and running around in small circles with my daughter on my around my neck, on my shoulders, because I couldn't trust anybody to look after her, obviously, and the security people wouldn't. So, I was running up and down, getting very hot and sweaty with her, and trying to find my son, and eventually I found him. He was further down the pier, but it gave me such a fright that
day.
And it stuck in my mind, so when I sat down and I thought, okay, I'm going to write a thriller now, where do I start? It just popped straight out.
Going back to Over by Christmas, your book that's out now, did you draw on some of your own experiences being in the Navy and everything?
Well, some of my buddies have all said there's a bit of autobiography in here, but I didn't deliberately do that. There's certainly a bit of my family mixed up in this, I have to tell you. and in the following sequel to it, there will be more of my family goings on, which are quite interesting in their own right. But that's a fictional level. But I don't recall bringing that in, because I was actually in the Fleet Arrow, not in the... what we used to call the hairy... we're the hairy fairies, you know, the Fleet Air Arm that landed on characters. And we used to call the others the fish heads. I wasn't a fish head.
No. You had a very interesting diving exhibition, though, which in a way prompted the book.
Yes, it did. Yeah, because as well as doing other things, I was a ship's diving officer in the mid-70s at a Scottish shore base near Arbroath. The captain gave me the responsibility for running a sub at the club, because he'd like to involve the local civilians as well. And so this sub-aqua club, I always knew what to do with my naval divers. I just put them in the local quarries, and they could earn their pay in there, unless they were actually, looking for bodies in aircraft and things like that. But the sub-aqua club was always very difficult to find somewhere new to dive on. And there was a well-known wreck there from the First World War. It was a Royal Navy cruiser called HMS Argyle. And she ran onto the Bell Rock, about 11 miles off the coast of Scotland, and smashed into the rocks in a terrible storm in 1915, right under the lighthouse. Mm. And a few days later, she was blown up because she was a bit of a landmark for German aircraft. And they couldn't salvage her. So she was lost and turned into a pile of plates at that stage in the First World War. And, of course, that was always an interesting place to go diving, but the guys were getting bored with looking over a pile of plates. And I was at home one evening reading a local newspaper, and there was an account by a young midshipman who was on the bridge at the time she ran aground. And he retired as a commander, obviously. And he made a comment that just stuck in my mind. He said something about, in the morning after the event, when the storm had calmed down, the naval salvage tugs went out and tried to pull her off the rocks. And when they did so, they only succeeded in pulling her 200 yards to port, where she settled and sank forever. And so that's where she was blown up. So I thought, well, what if these huge manganese bronze propellers that everybody was looking for 55 years were actually broken off when she ran into the rocks, and then they pulled her away, and everybody's searching the wrong area? So I did some research, and I set the guys out with myself. We went over the side, 200 yards to starboard, and there we were, right on top of these things.
Incredible. And what year was that?
This was about 1970.
And you found them?
I found them since the First World War, yeah.
That's incredible.
And so it was a successful dive, and I went on to do some more research on Argyle, because I couldn't understand. There were no records about her at all. I couldn't understand why she was on the rocks. How could that happen to a British warship? And it was interesting how it happened. And there was another interesting story concerned with the poor lighthouse keepers who were in the lighthouse at the time she ran into the rocks right under them. And all this sort of sparked some ideas off in my head. And actually, this whole story of Argyle, not the diving bit, but how she came on the rocks, is in Over by Christmas. And I went home and sort of looked through my father's records, because he was a naval officer in the First World War, looked through some of his service records, which I do from time to time, and things started to fall into place. And I suddenly had this urge to write about the Royal Navy in the First World War, because normally books about the First World War involve trenches and gassings and things like that, but very little about the Navy and the Navy's involvement. So I wanted to write about that. And then I came across this love story in Downing Street. I mean, if you can imagine, if you can picture, the Prime Minister was presiding over the War Council, with all these guys like Winston Churchill and Admiral Lord Fisher and Lord Kitchener all arguing the toss about what they were going to do with their resources. And he was sitting there literally penning love letters on Downing Street paper to his 24-year-old young lady.
Unbelievable.
And I thought, well, you know, this can't go without being written about
some more.
I mean, it is historically recorded by, by experts. And I had to get a lot of permissions from Oxford University Press to quote a lot of the letters. But I found it fascinating, and I hoped other people would.
Yeah, well, other people definitely did. As you mentioned, you've had some fantastic reviews, and I look forward to reading it myself. William Daish, we've been speaking to from the Costa Blanca to talk about his book Over by Christmas.
Before we go, could I just say one further thing?
Yes, absolutely.
Where can it be bought is the question. I want people to know where to go and get it.
Yeah.
You can visit my site, and then that's www.williamdaish.com, and there's a purchase page you can click on, and all the links then go to on-site areas. But the very good news this morning that I had was that Book World España will stock the book.
That's fantastic.
And meanwhile, there's a local launch incentive at the end-to-end store at the Polygono Training Estate of Pedregal, which has a very limited number of signed copies to sale right now.
Great, lovely. Sorry. So the easiest way for listeners to get more information about you and your books is williamdaish.com. That's Daysh.
That's great.
And the book is called Over by Christmas. Thanks ever so much for joining us on the book show today. And do keep in touch. Let us know when the thriller's out, because we'd love to have you on again to talk about that one.
I will. Thanks
William.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back the other side with our first REM listener onto the book show, Mighty Aurora.